This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to Twin Peaks Investing, the podcast brought to you by Peter Higgins. I'm at Conkers3 on Twitter, and my good colleague Peter at Wheelie Dealer on Twitter. This is podcast number 39, and the date is the 30th of December 2020. How are you doing, Pete?
Yeah, I'm really good. You know, I'm so pleased you said what the date was, because when we start, I always write down what the date is on my piece of paper, and my brain's going, "What is the date? I've no idea." And it's like so close to New Year, and it's just been Christmas, and you lose track of time, and you know how it is. What's the time, by the way?
18:19, Pete. It's 20 right. Past six, mate.
I got right out there because I'm sat on my sofa. I'm so far from my screen on my laptop. I can't actually see it. I can sit in the little corner there, but I can't actually read the darn thing. So 30th December. It's Wednesday, isn't it?
It's a Wednesday, and it's 6:20.
Wicked. So that's that bit of paperwork done on my. Yeah. Okay. Right. Yeah. What we talk? Oh yeah. I'm all right, mate. I've had some health niggles, and my hip is now perfect. So I'm really happy about that. But I still think I've got this antibiotic thing, which is, you know, the bladder infection, which is a pain. But last night, I actually wrote my first blog for weeks. And it was quite a weird thing to do, really. But I sort of quite enjoyed it.
Excellent news. And you were saying that your hip was getting better as well, or better?
Yeah, my hip is fixed, you know, so I can get back up in the wheelchair and stuff. I mean, if the bladder infection is still a pain, then it's going to make it awkward, you know, leaning forward in the wheelchair. So that tends to limit how much typing I can do. But, you know, if it isn't fixed, it just means more antibiotics, which is a drag and all the rest of it. But I sort of feel I've had a really weird period because, you know, not only not writing blogs for probably 3 weeks, which is like for 6 years, that's like the only time that I haven't produced any blogs. Otherwise, every week, at least one blog's gone out, often two have. And this is the first break I've ever had for like over six years. And it was sort of nice, but I've got so many things I want to write that I now want to get back up and crack on with it, you know? It's weird.
No, sometimes it's good to give the synapses a bit of a break, Peter. Do you feel refreshed now?
You know, it's really funny because obviously, you know, the health issues have tainted things a bit, but I've actually, over this sort of whole Christmas and New Year period, I sort of switched off because, you know, there's not much happening. It's like this morning I look at the RNS announcements, and there's probably only 4 or 5 that I'm particularly interested in. They're not exactly monumental. I mean, there's one on Alliance Pharma, APH. They've done an acquisition of some menopause brand or something. And that is significant because it's like it's going to be their second biggest brand. Because what they do is they buy existing drugs or healthcare brands, things like, I think, you know, might even do like chewing gum and stuff like that. They do, you know, they do weird stuff, and as well as drugs. And which is very much like Clin, one of the divisions of Clinigen is like that. And there's another company, Venture Life Group, VLG, which has got a similar sort of division. And basically what it is, these big pharmaceutical companies, they've quite often got these little sort of drugs or whatever, and it's too small for a massive, great company like AstraZeneca. So they sell it off to someone like Alliance Pharma. Alliance Pharma is really good, and it says in the update that it's going to be earnings enhancing for the current year, or I guess it means the next year, and then it says it's going to be significantly earnings enhancing going forward on that. So that's quite big news, that.
That is good news. I mean, immediately earnings enhancing in full year 2021 and significant for 2022. Yeah, I mean, if you can, this is my preferred way of mergers and takeovers, Pete. I like companies that do these small, earning enhancing bolt-ons, I call them. You know what I mean? They're not trying to buy something for half their market cap. You know what I mean? That's what I prefer. Slow and steady, bed them in, get see the work, sort the culture out, enhance the margins, then go to the next one. These mega mergers are just not me, Pete. I just don't like when companies want to do that. So yeah, hopefully, they'll get their rewards over the next 12 months, like you say, for Alliance Farm, and that's but as we've said previously, there's going to be more takeovers and mergers in the pharma space and every other space, and it's already started, mate. So
Oh, right. I definitely think so. Mate, on that Alliance Pharma APH, the other important sort of general learning point that it throws up is how important it is to read RNSs carefully. Because the standout thing on this is that you could read the start of it, you could think, that's a pretty big acquisition because it's going to be their second biggest brand. It's all funded by debt, so you're going to be thinking, oh God, their debt's pretty meaty anyway. Now they're taking on more debt, so you're getting worried, you know what I mean? And it's only when you get to the bottom that you get this bit about it being earnings enhancing, and then you get the next bit that says significantly earnings enhancing. So it's that difference in language, but that really makes a difference. And in this case, because it's debt funded, all of the earnings enhancement goes to improving the earnings per share because no new shares have been issued. So it's an example where using gearing, using leverage, using debt carefully, which APH have done over the years, can really, really help.
Sounds like they've got some quite prudent management there, Pete, which is always what you need, mate. If they're watching the balance, the account, very, very carefully, and not trying to get themselves too deep in the mire, because as we've said before, you don't want too many, you don't want a company that's too heavily indebted, where they're being anchored to the debt rather than, the earnings growth.
I think in some ways the debt has always held APH back. But I think I remember a few years ago, so I used to hold Alliance Pharma, but I don't hold it now. And I remember they had like one of their brands. I think they had like 27 brands or something. One of them was like mega, and then it had like a problem, like it had generic competition or something. And all of a sudden, its revenues dropped immensely, and it really held them back. And if you look at the chart, for 3 years, it hasn't really done anything. It's just sort of gone sideways. So I think it's one of those where it's a great company. If someone was to buy it and hold on to it with a 10-year view, they'd probably make a bit of money on it. Is it going to be the most exciting thing there is? It probably won't.
Yeah, I'm looking at the charts, and you're going back to let's go back to 30th of December 2017. It's at 67 pence. March lows of this year, you're looking at 60 pence there or thereabouts, and right now it's at 87 and a half. So yeah, it's been in a fairly, standardized sort of range for the past 3 years. But once it breaks out of the range that it's in now, which is, looking at 90, looking at it to, clo it's closed out, it's broke out, Pete, of 1 year high.
Oh, okay,
So,
that's good.
well, 2 year high. And then the next sort of trigger you're looking at is for it to break out beyond 93 pence. And then you're looking into a clear blue water of 101, which gives you a 5 year high.
Oh, well, that's, yeah, well, perhaps this deal then is the sort of transformational kick that it needed.
Absolutely, and the beauty of getting itself into size is that it once it becomes it's currently at 400 and odd million market cap. Once you get above 500 million market cap, it will attract further group of institutions that want to invest in that stock.
Do you know what? It's funny. It makes me think. It wouldn't surprise me if something like Clinigen joined together with Alliance Pharma. You know what I mean? It would sort of make sense, get more economies of scale and stuff, because they're so similar in what they do in so many ways.
As we've said, Pete, there's going to be more consolidation going on, mate, and people selling off what they deem as non-core and so on and so forth. And other people are going to look at, really, we want to scale up. So, yeah, more mergers and takeovers are going to definitely happen. And in light of that, I think we spoke about another company, Pete, some time ago, and you would have seen this news yesterday and today, with Admiral Group announced the sale of its Penguin Portals and comparison site to what was a division of Zoopla. So they've sold that for 508 million plus. So that's been a nice little push for that particular company, and it's took their shares to an all-time record high. You know, people talk about these momentum stocks and stocks that are doing well, and they blow hot and cold and don't go anywhere. Admiral has just chugged along quietly, mate, and it's been absolutely phenomenal for the investors that got in there early. Done exceptionally well over the course of time.
Admiral,
that particular stock, so, and paid lovely dividends as well.
Admiral, I sort of classify with DLG, Direct Line Group.
Yep.
They just both strike me as blooming good businesses. You know, they like you said, their history. I mean, you know, we can probably both remember. I mean, we're only young men, obviously, but we can probably remember when both of these companies pretty much started. And, you know, they've only really grown for 20, 25 years or whatever. And, I mean, Direct Line is particularly impressive because it doesn't even list on comparison sites. And, it's just the only way you can get a quote for DLG is to go to DLG, you know, to ring them direct. And I think they're both really impressive. I'm actually insured with Admiral. And I've always been very pleased with it.
If you're sitting there and you're wanting a stock to just chug along and do its thing, then Admiral's been very, very good with giving special dividends to people as well, Pete. It's up just shy of 200%. So 186% it's up over 10 years. And then you're throwing the dividends on top of that. That's not a bad return, is it?
That's a cracking return. Just think, you've basically done nothing. You basically bought it 10 years ago, sat on it, and you've made a load of money. I mean, that to me is really what investing's all about. I'm so lazy, it's ridiculous.
Lazy investing, mate, why not? That it works. Yeah. You know, you don't have to be chasing and churning. Because I had a really good conversation with someone today, and they were saying, you know what, every year, at the end of the year, I look at how much money I've spent in my investing portfolio. And he's not talking about money invested in stocks. He's talking about how much it cost him to run his portfolio. And every year he's looking to reduce it. So one of the things I would say to other people listening to this podcast is have a look back within your portfolio, if you can, and if it allows you on the platform to actually look at it. How much has it cost you to invest, to trade? How much have you actually spent in transactions, on transactions, backwards, forwards, regarding all your buys and sells? And I guarantee, right, if you're an active investor, momentum investor, chopping and changing, you'll be very, very surprised, or in fact, possibly alarmed at how much you've spent chasing this new stock.
Yeah. I think I'm really big on this. I mean, something I've been putting a lot of focus on in the last few years is to spend more time and more care in selecting my stocks in the first place. And then once I've got them, to hold on to them. I don't want to keep chopping and changing, because I really don't think it helps your performance. And I find with a lot of the, when I look at the results that people on Twitter put out, a lot of people I know really well, a lot of them tend to hold a lot less stocks than I do, but they tend to trade a lot more. But you look at the returns they get, a lot of them get better returns than me, and you know, some significantly better returns. But when you look at the effort they're putting in, and you look at the small number of stocks they hold, they flipping well should be making more percentage. And it's that sort of satisfies optimization of thing. If you've got to be able to achieve a return you're happy with, but without working too hard and without taking too much risk, and you've got to be able to sleep at night and stuff. And it's getting that balance right.
Pete, the most important thing is to rest easy. Yeah, if you chase returns, you will end up not resting so easy, and you'll end up anxious, or you'll end up over leveraged, or you'll end up with a position which is too large for your own comfort zone. So the minute it drops 5% or 10%, you're out, you know. And invariably, so every single stock that's done well over the past 10 years, yeah, that's done significantly well, as at a moment in time when it's been down 5% or 10% or even 15 or 20%. But because you've researched it, or you know it well enough, or you trust it well enough, or the management is good enough, that will recover. But not all good stocks do. But the ones that are of good quality will. And it's about being patient. But if you've not got a position which you're nervous about, and you're thinking, oh, crikey, you wake up in the morning and you're already stressed about it because it's down 5, 10%, because it's had a hiccup or a blip, then you're churning out, you're selling, and then you're going, oh, that's the next holding of mine. Oh, that's the next holding of mine. Because you sold out of it, but the stocks ended up doing really, really well.
I bet, mate. I bet there's loads of people listening to our podcast now, and that, well, I say loads. We only have about 6 listeners, but anyway. So the small group of people who are listening to our podcast are now thinking, "Damn, I held Admiral. I held Direct Line. Oh my God, they've gone up all that." You know, and you end up doing it so often, you sort of kicking yourself when you look back and think, why did I sell that? It was like one of the worst decisions I've ever made. Do you know, I'm sure you do, Nick Tudor on Twitter?
Yes.
Yeah. I met him once, really lovely guy. He'd come up to me at a Mellow gig, you know, Mellow conference thing, which really surprised me because he lives in Australia. So it's like, what are you doing here, man? And anyway, I think he's like Tudes100 or something on Twitter. He's very good. He's a nice guy and he's very good at investing. He put out some excellent tweets the other day about his returns this year, which I think were really good. I think it was like 21, 22%, something like that. And he sort of did a list of what he wanted to improve on and whatever, and what he had changed and what he wanted to improve on. And something that stood out to me in that was he said, you know, trying to trade less, you know, trying to stick more with winning positions. I thought that, you know, it's so important.
It's essential, Pete. It's essential. We don't gain the best outcomes by chopping and changing. Yeah. The biggest profits are made in buying good quality companies and being able to hold on to them. Yeah, because unfortunately there's going to be times when the markets, you know, throw us a bit of a wobbly, but if you get shaken out of the stock, then you're likely to lose over the long term, because you have to replace the loss with another stock and get that one right. But if you've got the one right in the first place, just because it's had a little bit of a blip, you shouldn't get forced out of that stock. If you can try your best not to be a forced seller, then you're likely to do okay if the company is a good enough company. If it's a tiny little minutiae company on AIM, that's a mining company or an oil company that's just digging holes everywhere, and the management are just looking after themselves, then you're not going to get that bounce back. You're not going to get that recovery in the share price, you know. But like, the more likelihood is that if you're in a FTSE 100 mil cap and above company and it's doing okay and chugging away and doing okay, the likelihood is over time you will do okay in that stock, and you might even do exceptionally well when that catalyst takes place in that company. So, you know, it's about patience, Pete. And I keep going banging on about psychology. You know, the enemy of every investor is himself, herself.
Oh, totally. Josh, this is something today. This is one of those weird interjections that I tend to suddenly come up with. I was listening to Radio 2 today, and I was pretty, I mean, I can't say I'm a huge fan, but it was that guy OJ Borge was DJ, and it's normally Steve Wright. And he was interviewing, I think it's called Kano, a guy called Kano from that group, Big Mountain, did that song "Ooh Baby I Love Your Way."
You're right.
Which I would sing for you, but you know it is.
I'm intrigued where this is going to be. Carry on.
Well, do you know what? No, what it was, OJ Borge was trying to do a thing like Smash Hits magazine, where he asked some dumb question like, what's your favourite food? What's your favourite colour? And he said, the question was, what's your phobia? And the answer Kano gave was a surprising one, and I really didn't expect this, and I thought, that's a brilliant answer. His answer to what's your phobia, you know, you're thinking he's going to say spiders, or I'm afraid of the dark, or I'm afraid of my shares dropping 80% in a day or something, yeah? What he said was, his biggest fear, biggest phobia is himself. And that really chimed with me. I thought, my God, that is so true to investing and trading.
Did he expand on what he meant by that, though, Pete, with his reference?
No, it was just bang, bang, bang. No, it was just like a, you know, I love Indian food. My favorite color is blue. The phobia is myself. And I sort of thought about it. I thought, he actually caught OJ Borge. Yeah, he didn't dig into it, which was a shame.
Yeah.
But I guess it's what we're thinking. And it, at the end of the day, mate, we can interpret that however we like. But for me personally, I straight away think about it for my investment. I think, God, it's so true. You know, it's my own psychology. It's the stupid things that I do that lose me money. That's what I'm really scared of. It's not really the market that loses me money. It's how I interact with the market that loses money.
I've not heard it said like that before, Pete. That is an absolute brilliant analogy and a brilliant point you've made there. We have a habit of getting in our own way, Pete. You know, we're either overconfident, you know, we're biased, we're overly wedded to the stock, we're herding because everyone's buying that stock. You know, we all these nuances of which I've spoken about before, we've got 207 cognitive biases that we're fighting against. Oof. Every single trading and investing day. And more often than not, we lose because we're not strong enough. And when I start talking about psychology, everyone rolls their eyes and going, on board already, Pete. Stood up, shut up, stop talking about it. But, you know, until we master that, and I haven't mastered it, Pete, yeah? I'm still working on it.
I'm not sure we have that.
We'll always struggle. And I'm reading a new book at the moment, a psychology book. And that to me, is probably the best book I've read on psychology in ages. So, and it's a trading book, so it's meant to be faster active, you know what I mean, in the sense of trading rather than investing psychology. So it's trading psychology. It's okay. Trading psychology 2.0, from best practices to best processes, by Brett Steenbarger or Barger, right?
Was that Brett? B-R-E-T-T-E-R.
Yeah, Brett N. Steenbarger.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's a brilliant, brilliant book, and I'm really, really enjoying that now. I'm just halfway through it, and so anybody that wants to sort the psychology out, that's my book recommendation. I'll seriously, seriously recommend that book.
Sounds interesting. On the subject of hanging on to things, I don't want to forget it because it was so important, and also I want to mention him because he's a good mate of ours, and he's very. Very supportive of what we've done with Twin Peaks and stuff. And that's good old Battle Bus, yeah?
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah.
What's his handle, his Twitter handle? I've no idea.
Battlebus 141.
Oh, there you go.
141.
So, yeah, he did his, like, review of the year. And he's done pretty amazing, really, because he was down really bad at one point during the year, as I'm sure most of us was. But I think, whereas a lot of us had started to recover after the March-April blip, he had a tough time, you know what I mean? But he's turned it around and he's come out, I think he said he was 13% up on the year, which I think is an excellent performance after, you know, after having a tough time, he's done so well. But again, he wrote in there, you know, what he'd done bad and what he could have done better, whatever. And he writes in there that he moved 50% into cash just before the drop, yeah? And he says now the better move would have been to have just held on.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at it now, Pete, and he's saying he was like minus 35% intraday, moved half of his portfolio. He's had a couple of baggers, you know, up 100% plus. And like you say, he's plus 13.2% today. So it just shows sometimes you've got to be ready to have that flexibility with your portfolio. But equally, I think quite a few people have acknowledged the fact that had they done nothing, they would be, you know, they'd be higher regarding their year-to-date returns than rather than selling out. But this is the conversation we had as well, Pete, back in June, July time. You know, those stocks that we held on to that have done exceptionally well or recovered, brilliant. You know, they're up and they've bounced back and they're ahead of where they were back in March. But equally, with the cash, had you had some spare cash, you know, with a new financial year for the ISA, that ISA money could have been buying you some of the stocks you wanted to keep at the lows in March and April. So it would have been even higher had you held on, but also added to that position.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, again, we're back to this optimization, what you're comfortable with. You know, that's a big thing, what you're comfortable with and what your own personal approach is. I mean, I think at the end of the day, to an extent, it is ways of skinning a cat. And there are various different ways of dealing with those kind of big sell-offs. But you need to sort of find a way where you're not stressed, you're not making snap judgments, you're not, you know, constantly chopping in and out right at the bottom, because that's just the worst thing you can do. And I think it's been such a weird year that, you know, it's like to have had, I've said this before on a podcast, this wasn't the most scary sell-off. I mean, I remember being much more scared in 2008-09. That sell-off was absolutely terrifying, I thought. But this one was sharper and faster and probably bigger. And yet, for so many people to have come out of the year back at break-even or slightly up or up nicely or whatever they've done, it's been such a strange year.
It's been a strange year, but I'll caveat what you've said, Pete, is that you've been in this market now for 21 years plus, yeah? Some people who've been in it for 3 years, 5 years or 7 years, this was the scariest moment ever back in March, April, mate. Yeah? And they're still...
Yeah, you're right.
And even though some of their stocks have recovered, not all of them have recovered, their portfolios might have recovered because some of the stocks that they've held have done exceptionally well and dragged their portfolios up. But they're still scratching their head going, what a year. And for some people, they're going to be anchored to that experience of where and what happened in 2020. And that's going to scare them and it's going to make them think. And hopefully, from what we said previously as well, some of those individuals, and I hope some of you guys and ladies that are listening, will start a journal in 2021, will write down why you're buying this stock. You know, why have you bought that stock? Oh, I bought it because X, Y, and Z was talking about it. No, don't do that. Don't buy it because X, Y, and Z is talking about it. Don't buy it because it's been tipped by here. Don't buy it because it's been ramped over there. Do some research. Find your reasons to buy that stock. And if you're happy, buy it. Write it in your journal as to why. And when things change, write down why you're keeping it. And when things change again, write down reasons why you're keeping it. And when things change again, if you still don't like the stock, write down why you sold it. And you've got a journal, write it in there. And if it's doing exceptionally well, write down why you've kept it. Write down why you've added to it, write down what happened, and keep a journal and learn from that journal. Yeah, and make your Twitter handle or the Twitter, you know, your Twitter base, that make that your part of your journal or the journal, you know, and be open.
There's so many ways of doing it, isn't it? You can use your, if you've got a Twitter account, you can literally use Twitter for that purpose.
And make it transparent. Be honest with yourself.
Yeah. Or as I say, write a little blog. You know, it's, you go to Weebly.com or millions of others. I use Weebly, so I'm always happy to promote them. I've never paid them a penny. It's free, you know, and you can do so much for free. So use that. And then other people can learn from your experiences as well. So, you know, it's never wasted.
Absolutely. I mean, Pete, we wanted to talk briefly about stocks that have given us grief this year. And you said that you had one or two there, and then I'll share two of mine as well.
Yeah, I mean, funnily enough, we sort of mentioned this one earlier. It's not so much given me grief, but it's one that has sort of frustrated me, really. It's like I don't really understand why, when everything else has bounced, it hasn't. and it's sort of a bit annoying. And that's one we mentioned earlier, Clinigen, C-L-I-N. It's carrying a bit of debt. I think that hurts it. I mean, it sort of looks on the chart like it's trying to turn up, but I must say I've been very frustrated by that one. But not as frustrated as Devereux, DVO. That's really doing my nut, that one. It just never goes anywhere. And you sort of get to the point where you think, okay, I like the dividend, 5-6% dividend. But you sort of think, if this one doesn't perk up at some point, I'm going to end up selling it just because I'm so bored and fed up with it. At which point, it will get a takeover bid and go up 100%.
That's often the case, mate. But that's just the nature of the beast, isn't it? You know, we end up, you know, we're often than not, and I don't know what it is about human nature, the minute that we sell it or very shortly after we sell it, there's either a takeover or the company comes out with relatively good news. And that's not dissimilar to my frustrations with Mercia, Pete. Yeah?
All right, Mercia Technologies.
Yeah, that's what it used to be called. Yeah, it's now Mercia Asset Management. Yeah?
What's the code on that?
MERC.
Okay.
So it's essentially, they've got a portfolio of stocks. And what attracted me is that they've got, you know, underneath the bonnet, they invest in stocks and unlisted companies. And essentially, you've got AI, machine learning, all the tech beauty stuff that I like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Med tech, you name it, software as a service, every single space you can think of that's high tech, they're in it. And they made an absolute stonking amount of money by being early investors in Blue Prism. Yeah, Pete?
Oh, right.
Robotics and all the rest of it. So that was my, I was looking at it thinking, why is this share price so depressed? Anyway, I bought it just under 3 years ago. And it goes up, it goes down, it goes up, it goes down. The companies that they've listed, that they bought into, some of them get bought out, they make a chunk of change on that. Some of the companies that they bought out list, they make a chunk of change out of that. All the time, the share price is going absolutely nothing, nowhere. So eventually, only a couple of months ago, I decided, I've had enough.
Yeah.
I've given you know, I think 3 years is a long time to be patient in the stock. You know what I mean? For it to do the business. And it's in a really sweet spot in the sense of tech.
Especially if it has good news and doesn't really react to it, if you see what I mean.
Yeah. And I just thought, you know what, I'm done now. So I sold out just under 18, I think it was under or over 18 pence. And I'd had it for 3 years. I made a loss of 47% all that time. And think about the loss of time, Pete, as well.
I'm sort of quite sanguine about that myself. I think it's unrealistic to expect everything to be a winner.
No, it's not unrealistic for it to expect to be a winner. I expect to have losses. I take quite a higher risk approach to stock, but inevitably you always get some stocks that just don't perform in the time frame that you give them.
Exactly.
You know, and that's about the psychology we're talking about, having patience. I think I'm quite tolerant and give things a lot of time. The only time I don't give stocks time is when it's on the occasions that I choose a mining stock, right, or an oil stock, and I go, I'm not comfortable because I'm not comfortable with my level of knowledge about the company.
Yeah.
I research it, but I still don't know enough about what they do or comfortable with what they do. I think that's another way of putting it. So I sold out back in September, Pete, and immediately after that, they went up a little bit, went up a bit more. And I think right now they're at 25 pence, so that's almost 40% above where I sold it.
Oh, yeah?
So it's not far off what would have been my break-even sort of thing. But I'm like, you know what, it's fine. I reinvested that money elsewhere and it's done okay, which is fine, fair enough. And then the other one was Hurricane Energy.
Yeah? Oh, yeah.
Which earlier in the year I got out of. And I took a 39% loss on that one. Yeah. And since then, the share price has gone even further down. But you remember in 2019, every man and his dog was talking about Hurricane. Right. Mm. And I researched it. I spoke to an engineer, a person that had loads of experience in the oil industry, told me about what they were doing and how they were doing it and the board and everything else. And I'd researched all that. And I thought, yeah, they could be onto something. And I don't think I was influenced by people talking about it on Twitter. And I think I was influenced by the fact that the management were top notch and what they were doing was going to be groundbreaking. But they just didn't get their approach play regarding getting the oil from, you know, the deposit up, and they're still having trouble with it now, Pete. And
they actually had an oil well, if you like, in the North Sea or whatever, and the issue then was getting the actual oil out, was it?
Yeah, they identified it. It was meant to have a large deposit, and then everything just went Pete Tong, mate. You know, so you're looking back in January, the share price was 30 odd pence. You're looking back 2 years ago, the share price was 60 pence, and right now it's 2 pence.
I remember, as you know, you talk a lot about herding and how quite often we find on Twitter that everyone's talking about the same stock. Hurricane was one of those. Everybody was in it, weren't they? And it was just, it's often a bad sign, isn't it?
It's often a bad sign, Pete. So as I always say with people, if everyone's talking about it, often best to just stay well away.
Oh, definitely.
You know?
On that Mercia.
Yep.
They're funny companies like that. There was another one, is it TMT Investments? I think it's like that. Where I often find those sort of small aim, sort of like, not asset, well, they're sort of fund managers or whatever they are, of unlisted companies and sort of high-tech unlisted companies, whatever. I always find them quite frustrating. And it's, to be honest, it's not really an area I bother investing in, because I often find they just don't really deliver. And they're so hard to value. It's like if I look at something like Clinigen, I can understand Clinigen. I can sort of see the history of achievement. I can sort of value it. I can figure out what's going on. You look at something like Mercia, where it's got, say, I don't know, say 6 or 7 startup companies. How the hell do you value those things? I just find it, well, it's basically impossible, I think.
Well, the thing with Mercia is that's what they do, Pete. They're trying to help startups. They're trying to help innovative companies. So they end up having a portfolio of 20, 30, 40 companies, and they'll invest 1 million here, 5 million there or whatever. And they're looking a bit like the Woodford strategy. They're looking for that unicorn where they get 10 times, 20-fold, whatever. And I think with Blue Prism, I think they got something like 85 times what they initially invested.
Incredible.
You know, so it only takes one of those to actually be a game changer for them. And they can afford for, I don't know, 20% of the investments that they make not to produce exceptional returns or even any returns to still be okay. But I think part of the issue with Mercia was just some of the stocks, the time frames that they'd given them to actually produce simply didn't happen. And it's that lag factor sometimes.
Okay, yeah.
Exceptional management. Exceptional company. I just think some of the investments didn't actually yield what they wanted it to yield in the time frame they expected, you know. And going forward, a bit like the Woodford stuff now, there's some of the stocks that he was got kicked out of and that his fund went, you know, went to the wall. Some of those stocks have done exceptionally well in the past year, and he's not there around to get the reward, and neither are the shareholders, you know.
That's just the game, the market just sticking its V's up, isn't it?
Absolutely, mate. Absolutely.
It's cruel and horrible. On those sort of like small asset management plays, there's a couple that aren't necessarily tech, but they seem to do quite well. And that's that Crystal Amber one, CRS. And there's another one I was thinking. Oh, yeah, Volvere. Is that VLE? I think it is. They're both ones that sort of similar in that they're small management companies, sort of in almost like, they are little investment trusts, really. And they invest in other companies. But they're different because Volvere is very much investing in recovery plays, like it owns Shire Foods pies and stuff. And Crystal Amber is more, again, investing in sort of like small established businesses, quite often recovery players, whatever. But I find those sort of things much more successful, really.
Yeah. It's finding the ones that are in the right niches for me, Pete.
And
the management are quite...
You love your tech, don't you?
I like my tech, mate, yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm in that, mate. It's done you very nicely.
It's done me very nicely, mate.
Something I do like about funds like that is that quite often it's worth looking at what those funds hold, and quite often they hold a listed company, and it gives you ideas for what to look at.
Good idea. Yeah, absolutely. Always interesting to look into what they're saying. And also look at what the fund managers are getting rid of as well, Pete, because that sometimes tells you that those stocks are fully valued.
Yes.
So Pete, tell me about your exceptional stocks that you've had. The year has made you purr. I noticed as well recently that you actually made a sale, mate, which you don't normally do either.
I don't normally do that, do I?
No, you don't, mate.
Heaven forbid. Well, I mean, I won't talk about MPAC because we talk about that every flipping podcast. But what I want to mention that is more of an intriguing one. I think I mentioned it on a podcast ages ago, but I don't think we went into it much. But it's one that's actually just broken out to all-time highs. And, you know, I haven't really made much money on it because I didn't put much money into it. But I'm just sort of really pleased with how it's going. And I wonder if it's got more upside. I think it probably has, but it's risky, it's speculative, blah, blah, blah. And that's good old Axis Technologies, AXS. And in a way, it's one of those where it hasn't been a huge contributor to my portfolio performance. But you know, when you come back to the ego thing, because as much as we always say, oh, you know, it's not about ego and whatever. It is nice when you get one right sometimes, isn't it? And I do feel with that one, I sort of got it right. And that's a nice feeling, you know, and the pound notes back that up. I think it's up sort of like 80% or something since I bought it. But I've held it a long time. I've probably had it 4 or 5 years. But, you know, it's one where I sort of think maybe I will add a little bit more to it because it is interesting. And they do, they're the ones that take Pine Softwood, yeah, which is cheap and light and very easy to machine. And they stick it in these reactors with some like chemicals and stuff, and it comes out and it changes the property of the wood. So it's not, a lot of people are under the misconception it makes the wood hard. It doesn't. You know, it's basically still got the same properties as pine in that, as I said, you can machine it easily. So if you're like having to saw, or having to, what do? You lathe stuff, I suppose, don't you? And whatever, you know, routers and stuff like that. If you're having to cut things about, then if you've got a wood that is soft as opposed to a wood that's really hard, like a mahogany or something, then you save a fortune in costs because it's so much easier to machine. So you get a prop. So the key property is that this wood is really stable. So what that means is, I mean, my brother explains it best. My brother actually works with James Davis, the other James Latham, LTHM timber merchant. And he got me onto this stuff because he said about how well it sold and whatever. And he actually gave me a block of wood of it. And you can chuck it into a bucket of water, and it doesn't expand or shrink or do anything. It just stays exactly the same size. And that's what makes it so useful. So what they do is it gets recommended by architects for things like door frames, window frames, whatever. And the beauty is you can make a window frame out of it and you can paint it. And that paint will stay on there for probably, I don't know, 15, 20 years. Whereas if you used a wood that moved, as in a wood that was unstable with the weather, you'd be repainting it every couple of years and it'd be driving you nuts. So that's what they do. But it's interesting because at the moment, they don't make any profit, yeah? It's all revenue, right? But the revenues have been growing year on year on year on year on year. And it's all about the capacity they've got to make more of this product, which is called Accoya. And they've recently added more reactors, more chemical reactors to their site in Arnhem, which is that Holland or somewhere like that, Belgium, wherever it is. Oh, it's Holland, isn't it? Bridge too far. And they're also building a new plant in Hull, which is a Tricoya plant. And what they do there is, in the old days, they used to take Acoya, the sort of woody, piney stuff, and they used to smash it up and make it into Tricoya, which is like a durable board that you can use outside, because you can't use like normal fiberboard or whatever, plastic or whatever, you can't use it outside, it's just going to fall to bits. Whereas this Tricoya stuff you can use outside. So what they're going to do, instead of making Acoya in Arnhem and then smashing it up to make Tricoya, they're actually just going to go straight into doing Tricoya at a Tricoya plant in Hull. So that's, you know, and that's coming, I think, next year, that's going to go live. And then they're looking at contracts in Asia, contracts in America, you know, licensing agreements and whatever. So there's a lot going on. Interesting company.
I like what you said there, Pete. And the interesting thing there is, goes back to the psychology of being patient. And you've also touched on the fact that it's not yet profitable, but it started to, it's put all the foundations together to trigger that growth. And the fact that you've said as well that tradesmen are recommending this, you know, and using it, always bodes well, because if you've got a product, you know, we're going back to, what was that pallet company called that Woodford was on, which nobody wanted to buy, and it ended up delisting?
Yeah.
Remember that? So it had all the technology, everyone's raving, no one was, well, he was raving about it and said it was going to become the go-to thing for pallets. No one bought it. But if the tradesmen are using it already and there's areas for growth, then that momentum could actually carry on and carry on to the point that it gets to profitability, and therefore the market cap will increase when that, because all the profit's starting to go to the bottom line then, isn't it?
Yeah, I think they're very near, or they might actually have achieved operating break even, but it's overheads and that are causing them to make a loss still. So if they, the key thing is about volume. My brother says to me constantly, they just cannot get, because James Latham are the biggest seller of Acoya, I think anywhere basically, and they just can't get enough of it. You know, there is a waiting list for Acoya, and the other incredible thing is that they keep rising the prices on it. Price keeps going up, and the market just pays it. So that's been helping. You know, the route to profit is the fact that they can charge more for it, because, well, wood in general, I mean, this year, it's funny because, again, you know, we talk about things that no one ever mentions. And it's like everyone goes about how gold has done so well and crypto has done so well and all the rest of it. One of the biggest rises this year is wood. Yeah, the price of wood has absolutely shot up.
I didn't know that about wood prices, Pete. Lumber. Yeah, I'm not tracking, yeah. I don't really track lumber, but there you go. That's an interesting point of view as well.
But, yeah, like I said, I mean, I think, you know, it's a risky company at the end of the day, because it is pre-profit. It's got quite a bit of debt, all that kind of stuff. And I think there's a real risk it'll end up getting taken over. And you know, your favourite take unders, where it sort of gets snatched underneath your nose.
I don't want to talk about take unders, Pete, because that's what's happened with TalkTalk. And then there was a Times article saying that it would appear, allegedly, folks, not me saying this, a Times article was saying it looks like there's a deal being done between Tosca Fund and Dunstone to the chagrin of shareholders. I'm hoping there's no truth in that. But I've sold out now. I cannot be bothered with all the shenanigans that may or may not be going on, and I've got the cash there waiting to deploy elsewhere. But take unders and really aggravate me, because, you know, you do all the research, you've got a sense of what the value is, other people in the market have got a sense of what the value is, and then the company gets taken away for 20%, 30%, 40% less than what it should be. Yeah, so, you know, you've got
to get away with those. The only way I can keep my sanity with ones like that is I sort of go back to that. I know we shouldn't, but I go back to that ego thing. I think, like, you know, at least it proves I was right.
Yeah. There is a lot of satisfaction.
Get the money, but it proved I was right.
Yeah, there's a lot of satisfaction, Pete. You know, I had a really, really good chat with Phil Oakley, at Phil J. Oakley on Twitter.
I wanted to mention that, mate. I'll cross that off my list of stuff.
Yeah, he writes for Investors Chronicle. It's a phenomenal individual. always straight talking, always honest. And one of the things he was saying, and this goes back to the ego thing, Pete. Yeah, this man's not got no ego, right? All he's interested in is educating people and doing what's best for everybody. And I asked him a question about the markets and stocks and so on and so forth. And you know what his answer was, Pete?
Go on.
His answer was, I don't know. And that just hammered home to me. We've got so many people on Twitter, right, who know every single, they know the value of absolutely everything. They know, they know what's going to happen in the market tomorrow. Yeah. They've sold a stock that's going to rise tomorrow, today. You with me?
Yeah,
the takeover that happens in 6 months, they're going to have that one as well. And it's like, you know, this man's got no ego. All he wants to do is just do the best for everybody and teach people and educate people as best as he possibly can and do it as objectively as possible. You know.
So he's, his approach then is a sort of, I know nothing, but I focus.
No. It's not that. His approach is, I know lots and lots of stuff about the market, but you've asked me a particular question and I don't know the answer to it.
Right? Okay.
No, and invariably, in our sphere of we see day to day, there are lots of egos on Twitter and across social media that know and have an answer for everything.
Yeah.
And clearly they don't, because that's why they've sold out of that stock at a loss and they've sold that stock at a lot and blah, 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 blah. They're trading and churning and trading and churning and psychologically, they're all over the place. They're not consistent even with themselves. Yeah. Which is why I'm always saying, I don't know. I don't know the answer. I'm learning. I'm reading. I'm trying to get better at this game. I'm nearly 30 years in and I'm still learning. I don't know it all.
Just because I think I could be accused of being guilty of, you know, having a view on stuff. But I think mostly, probably get it wrong sometimes, but I think mostly I say, I think this might go down tomorrow. Do you know what I mean? I couch it in language that introduces that level of uncertainty. I mean, sometimes I will say, God, I think it's, you know, 100% bang on, this is going to happen, you know? And okay, I can be wrong. But I think most times I say the most likely path is this. And I think with markets, that's all you can ever do. You can never know with certainty whether something's going to go up, whether something's going to go down, whether there's going to be a takeover, whatever. All you can say is, I think this particular stock may be subject to a takeover bid. From my experience, from knowing about this, that and the other, I think this stock, you know, this stock may do well, whatever. That's all you can do, really.
Absolutely. And talking about experience and lack of ego, Pete, I think it's time, because we're 50 minutes in or so already.
Anything off my list.
Your list is just getting bigger each time, mate.
It does.
It's to talk about the guest slot, what we talked about in the last podcast. So if everyone remembers, we put a little slot out there in a little segment in the last podcast, and we talked about having somebody from wherever in the world on our podcast and to come and have a little chat with us for 10 minutes or so. With regards to why they enjoy investing. Now, given we're in, you know, 90 different countries, I thought it'd be really, really great if we got somebody from somewhere exotic, you know, talking to us about their thing. And you know what? I'm not sure what happened. I think most people are a little bit wary of speaking live or a little bit nervous. But we've had some entrants. We've got two people that we... two replies that we really, really liked, and the first one of the replies is from someone on Twitter that goes by the Twitter handle of the name R Biggs, and the Twitter handle is I'll Get You Gadget. Yeah,
is that Ronnie Biggs, that train robber bloke?
No, that's not, definitely not. No,
is he still
So his reply was, I like investing because it may give me an opportunity to change mine and my family's life. I haven't been able to achieve much in my work career and came from little money. But so far things are going all right. Hashtag compounding bro. The second person we've got that we like, and their reply was really, really good, was from Vivek S. And his Twitter handle is at VSIHV, and that's VSIHV. And his reply was, fantastic effort in 2020 at Conquers 3 and at Wheelie Dealer. I enjoy investing, constantly learning about industry, companies, strategy, constant appraisal, reappraisal, objective results, driven feedback, keeping my head down when that happens. Yeah, Pete?
So those are the two that we had that we thought were really good replies,
and we've Pete and I have a little bit of deliberation about it, and we're going to be going with R Biggs, I'll Get You Gadget, because we love the bit about the career path and family and all the rest of it. And, you know, Pete and I are quite mindful about things, and it's about the long-term aspirations that this person has got and what he's trying to do for himself, the betterment of himself and the betterment for his family and all the rest of it. So that's the person we've chosen. And we'll get in touch with you, R Biggs, via Twitter DMs, and make the arrangements for you to be on the next podcast or the podcast after that, depending on what sort of schedule you've got and whereabouts you are in the world. But thank you ever so much for replying, all those people that replied. And we may, you know, with this, some discussion with Pete, we'll have a chat about whether or not we also have Vivek S on at some point in the future. What are your thoughts, Pete?
I mean, totally. I mean, I was, you know, I was impressed by all the entries we had, but some really good ones. And the one that really hit me about Ronnie Biggs, was that it was that sort of thing of I love the sort of humility of it, the sort of, you know, the way he's sort of being honest about it. It's like, well, I've really done as well as I'd love to have in my career, sort of thing. But I think with investing, it's the kind of thing where I can apply myself and actually do okay at it. And do you know what? I think he's absolutely right. I think we've had this conversation a million times, both you and I, and not from like mega backgrounds. We weren't like born in palaces or anything like that. You know, we're just normal blokes who went to comprehensive schools and whatever, and we did whatever we did through our careers and things, and we sort of stumbled into investing, and you know, we've done okay at it, and you know, I was able to retire at 44, you retired at like 20 or something, and and you know, I think it's about realism. And I think, you know, a lot of people going into investing and they're like, oh, I'm going to make 100% a year. Well, it's just not going to happen. But I get the impression that R Biggs, as you know, with his comment about compound, that hashtag about compounding is so important. It's that simple thing of, you know, if you can compound 7% a year, your money doubles every 10 years. And if you know, I don't think it's that hard to achieve that if you stick to quality companies, if you have diversification, if you stay calm, if you work at it, you know, all the good stuff. And you know, the fact that, as he says, you know, this could really help my life, this could really help my family. I just think it's just such a brilliant, it encapsulates such great sentiments, really.
Absolutely. And that's what we're all about. You know, Pete and I are very much about not only compounding, but looking at the bigger picture. The bigger picture is about how can you do something which not only benefits you, but benefits other people, you know, and the fact that you're trying to learn something. You're not just out there gambling like some people are, you know, with hundreds of stocks just churning, bang, 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 you know, chasing everything. You're trying to just do something slowly, methodically. And as Lord Lee says, get rich slowly. You know, that's what it should be about. You know, and the compounding element, like you say, Pete, is absolutely spot on.
On Vivek's one, I mean, I think there was a bit of a difference, really. I think with our Biggs's one, it was like a sort of big picture why I'm doing this, which was great. And I think with Vivek's one, it's more focused on the sort of the day-to-day and the nitty-gritty of doing it that he clearly enjoys. And I think I enjoy, I think you do, Pete. And it's, you know, he says, I enjoy investing, constantly learning about industrials, company strategy. Well, that chimes with me big time. Constant appraisal, reappraisal. You know, bang on, isn't it? It's like, you know, you're always we are constantly having to appraise so many things about the companies and about the share price charts and about what it's doing and blah, blah, blah. And then the objective results-driven feedback, that's such a good one. That it's like, there are probably very few things in life where, to an extent, you control it yourself. It's like when you work for a company or you're in a team or whatever, you might get a bonus for that team, and maybe one year you don't get your bonus, and you're really peed off about it because you think you worked really hard that year, and for whatever reason the company didn't achieve, yet you don't get your bonus. And that used to happen to me. It used to drive me bonkers. It is so annoying. And sometimes your performance would be marked down because other members in the team had been pretty useless or whatever. Whereas we're investing, it is really all down to you. There are no excuses. There is no one else to blame.
And that's the beauty of it, Pete. I think that's part of the beauty of it, that you are in control of your learning. You're in control of your own outcomes. And I say this to so many people. They're like, well, why don't you do this and why don't you do that? I'm very rarely, if ever, influenced by any negativity or any positivity that anybody has to say about any stocks that I own, right? Because it doesn't matter what I say about the stock or what they say about the stock, they're not going to impact the profitability of that company. The only people that can do that is the company. Yeah?
And it's your interpretation, your judgment of the company that really matters, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And obviously putting the money to it. No,
absolutely.
And both of those great answers. Love them.
Yeah. So we're definitely going to be in touch with you, Arbigs. And we very much look forward to having you on the show, the next one or the one after, depending on your scheduling and all the rest of it. Pete, I'm conscious of the time, and I wanted you to talk about one of the stocks that you're very happy about.
Okay, before I do it, can I just run two very quickies, right? First one, you talked about your interview with Phil Oakley. People can find that, can't they, on Conker's Corner. But mate, where is it? Where can I find it?
Yeah, sorry. They can find the Phil Oakley interview on my website, which is conquers3.com. And they can find it on Audio Boom, Spotify, iTunes, Google, and also on Overcast as well, looking for Conquers Corner. And yeah, we cover lots of different things regarding the markets, macro, debt, growth, value, how to find winning investments, etc., etc. So yeah, it's definitely a recommended listen over the Christmas period. It's not going to be something that ages, because it's just about style investing and thinking about what you're doing as well, the psychology of investing and how not to get influenced by the noise.
Sounds good. And you tweeted that out, and I think I retweeted it myself earlier today, so early on Wednesday. If anyone can't find it, DM me. My DMs are open. Just DM me and I'll point in the right direction. The other thing I wanted to mention quickly was, right, Pete, do you know a magazine? Have you ever come across a magazine called Growth Company Investor?
No.
Okay.
Yes. I've seen it going past my timeline, Pete. Yes. On Twitter. Yeah. Yes. Sorry.
Oh, Growth Company Investor's been kicking around forever, right? And I got a feeling it used to be owned by Quarto Publishing, which was a listed company. Remember that?
Remember those? Yes, Pete. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't remember what the epic on that was or anything, but they're no longer listed or anything. I think they were taken over, maybe.
QTRO, I think it was, mate.
Yeah, that rings a bell. That rings a bell. Anyway, this Growth Company Investor, I subscribed to it for a few years, maybe, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years ago. And I quite liked it. It was like a sort of, almost like a newspaper. It came out once a month. It was like a glossy newspaper with loads of pictures. But it was good for ideas, and it did like small companies and growth companies and whatever. Anyway, I can't remember why, but I stopped getting it. I think it was like anything. You never got time to read all these things, have you? But anyway, what I thought was interesting was that the other day, I was involved in that Mellow event thing that David Stredder put on, that Carmen's fella. And you know, the Monday night thing. And one of the guys on there was a chap called David Thornton, who is now the owner of Growth Company Investor. Do you know David Thornton? Have you ever come across him?
I've seen him about, yes, mate. Yeah, I have.
What has he, where have I seen him before?
On Twitter, mate.
No, but I mean
Twitter,
like...
He's also been at previous Mellows, I think.
But do you know what? Years before, I know that name. I wonder if he used to write in Money Week or... I don't know. I just... But anyway, he was on Mellow. He seems quite a sensible chap. So, and I, you know, having a look at Growth Company Investor's Twitter feed, it looks quite sensible. So, you know, it might be just something. I'm just letting people know. I've got no relationship with the guy, whatever, but just thought it was interesting.
Okay. So which stock are you going to tell us about, which you're very, very pleased with, Pete, so people can see one of your significant winners?
Oh, well, no, we talked about MPAC, we talked about AXS, didn't we? Which, you know, AXS hasn't been financially a great winner for me this year,
but
done well, it's broken out. So I think I sort of covered that.
Okay, let me tell you about the one that I'm most chuffed with, Pete.
Yeah,
and the reason why I'm chuffed with this is that it's been lampooned and battered by everybody, right? And that company is called ITM Power PLC.
Oh, yeah.
Ticker symbol ITM. And I've held that stock from 23 pence in October 2014. Yeah, we've had two trading days so far this week, and each day it's popped up above £5 per share. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Now, bear in mind that I've trimmed bits and pieces on the way. Yeah, and today I've trimmed some more at £4.97, just shy of £4.98. Yeah, so that stock is now my second stock that has been a 20 bagger.
Whoa.
And we started 2020, people talking about 100 baggers. The problem with trying to get a 100 bagger, a 20 bagger, or a 10 bagger is patience and psychology. This stock is still a loss-making stock. It's laying all the foundations. It's got behemoth companies from around the world invested in the company. It's in hydrogen, it's in electric vehicles, and so on and so forth. And there's lots of talk about green hydrogen. I don't know where this company will go. Yeah, I'm not recommending anybody buys it. I never have done. Yeah, but the reason why I'm pleased with it is because this year it's done exceptionally well, and it's up a further, after being lampooned throughout the year, it's up 599% year to date.
That must be one of the biggest gainers this year.
Yeah.
Of any stock, you know what I mean?
But I'm not pleased about it in the sense of the price rise, Pete. What I'm pleased about is that everybody that's had a knock at this has knocked it all year long and knocked it the year before that as well.
That's funny, because that's back to ego again, and it's like, as much as we try not to have ego, there is a little bit that sort of says, oh, I'm really pleased I got that right. Do you know what I mean? It's
I won't deny it, but the beauty of it is, having sold it today, right, and having I've still got a fair bit of it, and I've sold enough today, yeah, and I've sold enough in the past to have done significantly well out of it. Yeah, so I always say to you, when you're getting happy with a stock, to sell some. So that's what I've done today, you know. So it's up 20-fold plus, yeah, and I've got that cash there sitting in the ISA, and I can reinvest that in the new year in something completely new if I want to.
You've sliced a bit off. Yeah.
And, you know, it was a chunky sale today, and I thought, you know what, let me just get some of that money and put it aside and then reassess what's going on in the year. We've not touched on Brexit, Pete. The Brexit deal, what they're going to do, COVID's going up. No one knows what 2021 holds.
No.
Yeah? I could wake up in the middle of January and ITM is 50 pence a share. I don't know. But I've taken some off the table, and I'm happy with what I've done. And if this time next year we're talking about it and it's £10 a share, I'll be happy again. But I don't know what the future holds for that company.
2020 has taught us again that, you know, the macro stuff can be doing some weird old whatever. My mate Paul Hunt on Twitter today said, I think he's at Lotus Esprit Lad. He said on Twitter today, he said, you know, the world is tumbling, or, you know, the world is falling to bits, you know, debt up to your eyeballs, COVID's gone rampant, you got a new whatever, and yet the stock market just keeps going up. I mean, it's, you know, it's been such a strange backdrop, hasn't it, in that? And it's, as you said, it's like you can never know what a stock's going to do.
You've got to be mindful that the market is here to teach us lessons every single day of the week.
Exactly. You
know, and the phrase that you're always hearing is that every day is a school day, and you've got to be ready for it, because, you know, if you come into the market with an ego, thinking you know everything, you're going to get hurt. You know, exactly. It will teach you a lesson. It will cost you money. And it's far better to learn from the likes of Phil Oakley, yeah, and other experts that are out there, yeah, rather than learn too much or try to have an ego to say you know everything already and get caught out and get expensive lessons, because, you know, you're going to have to pay the fee and you're going to have to be patient. You can't, there's no shortcuts to getting this thing done well and to be successful. There are no shortcuts, people. So if you've got experts out there like Phil and others, then tap into them, read their articles, listen to their podcasts, you know?
Use what's there. Mate, a couple of quick stocks. One I don't hold, yeah? But one you know a lot about, SWG, Shearwater Group.
Okay.
Their results, was it yesterday or the day before, a trading update they had, actually read pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, they got themselves a nice little deal there, Pete. It was like the final sort of, it was one of them where they either had to deliver or it was going to go to a pound, mate. And I think a lot of people were surprised. It popped up. I think it was it 10% or 9% yesterday? And essentially, they secured two 12-month contract renewals and reached the two new agreements with an unnamed British National Investment Bank and Financial Services Co. So that was and you know, trading continued to be buoyant with recognised revenues for October and November being 39% ahead. So finally had a pop. Is the bottom in? I really don't know, Pete. But there was I had a sense that this was going to be my last time of holding this stock. So this was going to be. I didn't actually know the trading update would be yesterday.
Do you hold
Pete.
It now?
I still hold it. Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
So it was one of those where the next trading update, whether it had been December or January of next year, if it had gone, sorry, we're expecting to reach this and do this and have these contracts. And did it, I probably would have been out. And the reason why, Pete, and this it sounds like I'm contradicting myself, is that if you are in a very hot space where everyone else is winning contracts and your company, it continues over a period of 6 months, 8 months, 9 months, 18 months to not win contracts, that's a little bit of an amber flag for me.
Oh,
why
yeah.
can't you win contracts? Why can't you get, you know, get these deals? Why can't you get these renewals?
Because they're in cyber security, aren't they?
Cyber security, like, AI cyber security, mate. You know,
should be one of the easiest things there is to make money in.
Absolutely. So I was, if that had come out yesterday and said, you know, I would have gone bosh, and I'd have been taking, I don't know what it would have been in.
Yeah, no, that makes.
You're looking at 35% loss on it, you know.
The other one I wanted to mention quickly is one I do hold, but I noticed it had a good move up today when the market's a bit funny at the moment, so we need to be careful. But I think it still looks cheap. And that's good old Somero Enterprises, S-O-N.
Bye-bye, all.
Historic dividend is 4.5%. They quite often give out a special dividend on top, so... But anyway, I think that one looks pretty good, so be worth keeping an eye on.
The thing I don't like about Somero, Pete, because if I remember rightly, isn't that the one that struggles each time it gets wet?
Yeah, no. Well, they're very, very cyclical, because it's basically what they do is they make machines that lay flat concrete floors, and a lot of their business, if you like, is it needs their agents, if you like, or the people who use their equipment to be out laying floors. And obviously when it's hurricanes and wet and whatever, you can't go laying concrete.
Yeah.
So that's always possible.
You and I know people in the building industry, Pete. I've never heard of anyone buying their kit. you talked about Latham and the other one, Access. You know, I don't hear anybody buying their kit. Have you heard of anybody buying their kit in the UK?
Well, the funny thing is, mate, they got 90% of the worldwide market.
Yeah, but what size is that market, Pete?
Well, it's pretty much as big as their revenue. Well, no, I think...
You've answered your own question there, mate. Oh, my gosh.
No, I think the point is it's a growing market. So you've got US, they're big. Because what it is, you know, in the old days, you used to make a warehouse and you'd just lay concrete down. And it didn't really matter what standard of laying the concrete was. As long as it had a sort of flat floor, that was all you needed. Problem you've got today is that because they've got these big warehouses like Amazon and stuff that have robots and things, yeah, the floors have got to be perfectly smooth. And you cannot have a join. If there's a join, the robot can't get over the join. So they basically create, they do, Somero do machines that create continuous floors that are completely flat and smooth and level. And it's the demand is growing, definitely.
Okay. No, if you're saying about the warehousing, I completely understand that, because that's going to be and is a massive, massive sector. Regarding the e-commerce stuff and all the storage stuff that's going on, and the, you know, the hubs that are being built, that's going to be used. If they can corner that market, Pete, you know, because I'm thinking, you saying that to me, I straight away went ping to tech, and the tech I'm thinking about is 3D printing. Yeah, so actually just have the machine there, and you're printing the floor in concrete, so it, whoosh, and it's done.
You know, it's not a million miles from that kind of thinking. I mean. So they're basically, they are an American company, so their main focus is in America, but they're gradually expanding out. They're not doing much in China yet, because again, China's still in that old world of not really having amazing floors. But the time will come where they need that kind of flat level floor. Things like Ocado with their amazing picking machines and that, it's not going to work if you've got a ripply, horrible concrete floor.
Yeah, I can get that. And that's why I'm saying I'm on that 3D tip already, mate. And if that's
and they've also got new products.
If that's where they're heading, or that's essentially what they're doing without it being 3D, then they could do very well indeed, mate. Very well indeed.
So maybe
I've just been too negative on them historically.
I think it's fair enough, because it's been very up and down. But it just strikes me it's in that up phase again.
Okay.
But, yeah, no, it's an interesting one.
Cool. Pete, I wanted to... Because people seem to like me talking about a completely random stock they've never heard of before.
Okay.
So I'm just going to close off with this one. The stock ticker symbol is... $PDD on the NASDAQ, and I'm going to pronounce it the way that I would pronounce it. You guys can find out how it's pronounced properly. Is Pinduoduo. Yeah, Pinduoduo. And it is the largest interactive e-commerce platform in China and in the world. It is the second largest online marketplace in China by a number of users and number of orders. Yeah. And it's also one of the world's largest internet companies.
Yeah.
And as I said, it's PDD. And it's done exceptionally well year to date. It's worth investigating. It's got a market cap, believe it or not. You've never heard of it, right? But the market cap is $203 billion.
Mm.
Right? And year to date, it's up 370%. And it hasn't stopped growing yet. So the reason why I'm mentioning that is because whenever people think of internet, e-commerce, US, China, they think of Alibaba Marketplace. Pindu is another one in that space, and it's already of that size, and not many people in the UK know about it. So check that one out, ticker symbol, $PDD, Pinduoduo, that's how I pronounce it. It could be completely wrong, but that's probably worth investigating, folks.
Mate, that reminds me of THG.
Yes, the Hut. Yes.
The Hut Group.
on a very smaller scale. Yeah.
Yeah. Jam Good News is a UK listed one. If people, cool.
Absolutely. So that's me more or less done, Pete. I mean, we didn't speak about the lockdown. The news is out tonight, folks. You don't want to hear about it. There's more and more tiers. Another, I don't know, 10 million people going to be in tier four. Leicestershire's now from 3 to 4. Today is the anniversary since I last hugged my dad and my mum. So not a good day for me, folks. But yeah, there we go. Let's need to finish on something positive, Pete. So come on, share a little bit of positivity for us, mate.
Well, not really positive, but just
you've got 30 seconds to make it positive. Come on.
Just a quickie to throw in. I remember the other day, you know, good old Chuck Prince. Remember in the height of the dot-com booms or what? No, it was 2007-2008, wasn't it? The markets kept going up and it didn't really make any sense or whatever. But Chuck Prince he was the head of Citigroup or something. I might have even mentioned this on a podcast before, I'm sure I have. But he said that thing, while the music's playing, we got to keep dancing.
That's a brilliant sentiment.
Brilliant sentiment, I think it's so true. It's like, yeah, it makes no sense the markets keep going up, but there are pockets of value. You can find it out there. And, you know, while the markets are going up, sitting on the sideline in cash is not going to achieve you anything.
Agreed.
It's going to make you very frustrated.
Yeah. With the conversation I had with Phil, one of my resolutions was I'm going to write down regarding the Pareto principle, P 80-20 principle, is to reduce the amount of hours that I research a stock.
Ooh.
And one of my plans for the year is to spend far more time just chilling out, being away from the market, being away from social media, and just enjoying life, because I've lost too many people this year, Pete. You know, and I want to enjoy my life whilst I've still got it, and enjoy it with the people that I can spend time with. I'm looking forward. Just people have been saying, "Oh, when we're having beers." I'm looking forward to when I can share a beer with you and a couple of people that we know on Twitter that are looking forward to spending time with. Because you know what, I miss being in the pub, Pete. I miss going out socialising.
Oh, I am.
And I'm really, really looking forward to New Year's Eve. I mean, I'll have to put a tiny little post out if my bosses let me, but. We have a rave, mate. There's going to be three of us, and it's going to sound like a party of 100 because my wife.
You'll be at the police knocking on
my wife and my mini boss, and I will. We'll have the disco lights on. We'll have the volume as high as we possibly can. It'd be in our detached house, but the neighbours will be able to hear us from far and wide. So if any of them ring the police, be like, "We're coming in, Mr. Higgins." You know what I mean? I'd be like, "Oh, there's only three of us." No, there's too much noise for that. They'll come in and they'll have a look and think, "Crikey, mate, just turn it down a little bit." So I'm really looking forward to New Year's Eve, Pete.
That's brilliant.
3 o'clock in the morning, I'll still be dancing, mate, and I'll wake up at 12 o'clock as I normally do the next day on New Year's Day, with hungover to the yin yang, but a very happy boy, you know. So that's me.
Well, I haven't really got any plans for New Year. To be honest with you, with the way things are at the moment, I'm just quite happy to see 2020 quietly slip by, and let's crack on with 2021, because I think, you know, it's going to be good.
Yeah, I'm hoping it's going to be a good one, Pete. So on that, folks, Pete and I want to thank you all so very, very, very much, wherever you are in the world and whatever your circumstances. We're blessed the fact that we're able to get into 21, and we're blessed to have you, ladies and gents, listening to us. You know, you're listening to this now, and we're now 1 hour and 22 minutes in. So thank you for your patience listening to us. These podcasts seem to be getting longer and longer. We might have to write this off as a Christmas New Year bonus. You know what I mean? Because it's gone so long. But thank you all for your support. You know where to find us. Please subscribe to Audio Boom, Spotify, Overcast, Google, iTunes, SoundCloud. Wherever you're listening on, please subscribe to us and just keep the faith. And hopefully you've enjoyed what we've done, and we've informed, given you some insights and given you some learning. And thank you all for your feedback, because it's been absolutely phenomenal what we've had so far. And thank you for just keep putting up with us. So wanted to just say God bless.
Thank you. See you all later.
Take care, Pete. Stay safe, mate.
Cheers.
Take care, everybody. God bless. See you in 2021.
This Twin Peaks Investing podcast was brought to you in association with ShareePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.